Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How you doing, Adam?
Ben, if it sounds like I'm a little bit happier than I usually am, a little less burdened than normal, it's because you and I discussed last night, I finally deleted my Facebook.
Hey, congrats.
It's gone.
Hey, that's a big step.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel better now that it's done. You and I came to the decision that it wasn't for us anymore. Facebook, the many awesome groups that have formed around this show, those are for our viewers. They aren't for us. We don't need to be there.
It started to feel weird for us to interact there in some ways.
Weird, but not like, the bad definition of weird, just not healthy.
I also think that getting off of Facebook in general is a good thing that most people should do.
Yeah, as a business move, like as a
protest against what a garbage corporation Facebook is.
Absolutely, yeah.
And all of their products are. But yeah, like it's one of those things, right? Where like I love the existence of those communities, and I would be really sad to see those communities dissipate for some reason, like the company that runs the message board that they're on is a piece of garbage that is a threat to the democracy that we have previously enjoyed. That would be sad.
It's weird that like 100 times out of 100, these good ideas turn sour and get manipulated and perverted into bad things. And I mean that description in like the macro sense and not the micro sense of our nice fenced in garden
right.
that exists there that is
well,
actually
it would be
good,
like if,
you know?
If we, like looking at the fact that there's a large number of Friends of DeSoto out there, you know, numbering in the thousands to tens of thousands range, if we decided to like whip them up and weaponize them into something, you know?
Yeah.
Which would be bad.
We would never think to do that.
We would be garbage people for making a decision like that.
We only whip them into a froth about going to our live shows.
Yeah.
That's all we like to do.
That's the one way we exploit the existence of our listenership.
I'm truly grateful that so many people have found like good and peace and funny there. I'm not indicting any of those people or any of those groups, to be clear.
Right. Yeah. But it's a personal decision. I'm proud of you for making it. Adam, we're recording a bit early in the day for a Greatest Gen.
Sure.
We're actually
are.
Recording in the normal friendly fire time slot.
Yeah.
So if we just like suddenly start talking about a war movie, I hope people will forgive us.
Cut to John Roderick still sleeping.
I'm drinking a smoothie instead of a glass of tequila.
Did you make that smoothie?
I did, yeah.
How about that? What do you got in
there? Fired
that thing?
Up the blender.
What's your breakfast smoothie?
This is one banana, splash of OJ, and some frozen tropical fruits and a couple of strawberries.
Oh, look at you. That sounds pretty nice. I would need some protein in that to get me to lunch, though. I lived a smoothie life for a while, and I realized very early on that the fruit smoothie is something that burns very fast in my body.
Do you do a powder, or do you, like, crack a raw egg into your smoothie?
Oh, I mean, either, if I have them available.
Yeah. Or both? How much is too much protein for one smoothie?
I'll just drink the raw eggs while the smoothie is mixing together. Save some time.
Yeah.
I love cocktail with the egg white consistency, though. So I wonder if that's a thing that happens in your smoothie. That must be pleasant.
Yeah. I bet it would smooth it out.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have that thing where you could kind of like talk yourself into the idea that maybe the alcohol is killing any pathogens in the raw egg?
I've never thought about it that way at all. I've never even considered the idea that there was anything dangerous in a cocktail made with egg whites.
I think it used to be illegal in California. I don't know if it still is or if it's just unenforced, but very early in my being interested in cocktails, I had a cocktail with some egg white in it, and the bartender was like, you know, I actually shouldn't be making this for you.
And now in California, they just have to serve that cocktail in a glass that's labeled, the contents of this container may kill you or cause cancer.
Yeah, the egg in this glass is known by the state of California.
You're a true Californian because you can say that warning from memory.
I could pull that specific weird label that's on everything. I think that was like one of those ballot initiatives that was like voted on by the public.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the things that have to have that label on them, like there's not actually that much basis in science for the warnings on some of that stuff.
Hmm.
Because like what the state of California considers to be carcinogenic is like a way lower threshold than what, you know, the federal government considers to be carcinogenic.
Oh, interesting. I did not know that.
That's a half-remembered thing I heard maybe one time. Please don't take that as the truth.
That's what we do on this show. We just exchange half-remembered bullshit between ourselves.
Oh, Adam, it feels good to be casting some pod with you. I feel like it's been a weirdly long time since we've recorded a Greatest Gen.
Yeah, I think that's true. We've taken a little bit of a break. We thought we had enough runway to get through December. Turns out, like, my calendar was updated with two episodes that we had yet to record. So,
yeah.
Fuck me, right?
You were brimming with undue confidence. And I thought I would tell you a little... I mean, not to belabor this marin any longer than it already is, but I thought I would tell you a moment that I was brimming with undue confidence that I've gotten from this show.
Hmm?
I was in public doing bits, Adam.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
You're always doing
bits.
No matter what.
You're always doing
bits.
I was doing bits.
Bad bit moment. You should really have saved that for your private time, Ben, instead of being out in the world doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the always doing bits segment has really captured the imagination of the public. Something we didn't really realize until we started playing the music on stage at live shows.
Yeah. Whenever we're feeling like we need a pop in an emergency kind of way, that's all we need to do is hit that button.
There's now an unofficial Twitter account of bits that we do.
Is there?
Have you seen that?
No.
There's an unofficial Twitter account. I can't remember what the handle is, but I'm sure people could find it if they look.
Because everything we say needs to be cataloged and organized.
Yeah, yeah. Duh. I would say that the core of this segment, which I think we got away from a little bit the last time we did it, and mostly I got away from the last time we did it. The core of this segment is that we think that we're funny to everyone, and we're really just funny to each other.
Right.
and we've ruined each other for polite society. So
that is perfectly true.
I had an example a couple of days ago that I've been cringing about every time I've thought about ever since. I went down to the grocery store near my house, and I was getting some provisions. I was going to cook some dinner, and I was going to cook something that involved black beans. And so I was in the canned goods aisle looking at the different options for beans, and a number of the bean cans were on sale, and reading this tag aloud I thought was gonna like get everybody in the aisle cracking up with me. I go, hey, look at this, these beans are normally $1.49 and they're on sale for $1.49.
all I do is
bits, no matter. And there's like two other people in the aisle with me that ignore me, do not look up, do not stop what they're doing. And I literally just like grabbed a can of beans and left. It literally, they printed out a sale tag that said 0% off. It actually said that.
Is this something that you took a picture of?
I wish I had. I had to get out of there, man.
Ben, I would have set my basket on the ground and just walked out of the store.
I came as close to doing that as I could while still getting the groceries I needed.
Oof. That's pretty rough.
Yeah, I mean,
there's that performative volume that a person talks at when they're doing a bit too, like when they're trying to gather people into earshot.
Yeah, like you guys all know me. I'm quite funny.
Oof.
Yeah. Terrible.
I'm sorry to hear that, Ben. That is that's a bit that didn't work, but I have a story of a bit that really did. One of the rare bits in the wild.
All right.
That worked for everyone. You and I have been traveling a lot recently for work, and I've tagged a few trips onto my calendar that had been for play, and I was in the airport a couple of days ago, and I've been using Clear. Clear is like upgraded pre-check that you use your fingers for.
Right. It's a way that you pay a corporation $100 to have biometric data on you, but then you don't have to pull your ID out of your wallet when you're at the airport.
Seems like a great trade, right? Clear, not a sponsor of Greatest Gen. This is not branded content, certainly. But so I go through, on one of my more recent trips, I went through the Clear, which is the checkpoint part, and then I went into the lounge. Also, you know, now that I've started telling this story, I realize how bougie this travel experience is, like having gone through Clear and then going to the lounge. But here's where it gets funny. I step up to the check-in desk at the lounge, and they also use Clear to check you in. And so I stick my fingers up on the finger reader, and boy, oh boy, my fingers are just not reading at this reader. And I'm like rolling them across the thing again and again. And the guy's starting to get a little frustrated by the situation. And I was like, boy, must have left my good fingers at the TSA.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
And it just like, it blows him back in his chair. The person who like stands by the door heard it. They start laughing. The person next to the person I told that to starts laughing. It is like, I blew their heads off. All of them. Three headshots.
Oh, bang, man.
Bang, bang, bang.
I think that if you wear a uniform and sit at a desk at an airport and are a representative of an airline, like such a high percentage of your interactions are super negative.
Yeah.
Because people are angry that their flight got delayed or whatever, that like any amount of just like frivolity or niceness is, you know, they eat that shit up.
Yeah, like the idea that someone could be jovial in that interaction, which is what I brought to it, certainly. Ben, I even got the guy behind me, just the civilian behind me started laughing, and that's what made me feel the best, is because it wasn't just a bits on tips situation, it was, I got that guy too.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I have one more on my little my little buck slip that I write these down on. Do you want do you want one more bit before we
sandwich
get into show?
Sandwich my bit, Ben. Make it the meat in this bit sandwich.
Occasionally, I will do a bit on my wife.
That is, and just don't. Don't even try, Ben.
It's very unpredictable, because sometimes, like,
I don't even do bits on your wife.
It is totally unpredictable whether she'll think I'm hilarious or I'm a fucking idiot. It's unpredictable in a way that I find tantalizing. I love to make her laugh. She has, like, one of the great laughs.
It's why we remain.
Yeah. But also, like, you know, there's an inevitable percentage of bits that fall super flat or make her angry at me. And the other day I was driving around doing some errands, and we just changed what car we have, because the car that we had before was a loner, and we really needed something that was actually ours and wasn't the most horrible thing in the entire world.
Ben, can I just jump in here to say that, like, you can tell that you're a real carman for the terminology you used for buying a new car. Because no one ever describes it as changing what car we have. You are a delight. I love the idea of you guys walking onto a dealership lot and being like, "Hello, one change of cars, please."
We'll give you this one. You give us that one. Deal. Anyways, I was driving around doing some errands, and I had this weird day where I saw no fewer than 3 pretty rugged car accidents.
Oh.
And, like, one of them was pretty, like, lightweight. It was just, like, merging, you know, on a city street, and 2 cars made some contact. The second, I was, like, in the left turn lane at a 4-way intersection, and watched a Tesla and, like, a Honda Civic with primer on one of the door panels just do a full head-on collision.
Oh.
When the Civic was trying to turn left across traffic and the Tesla was powering through.
Oh, no.
And then, like, later in the day, I watch, like, the exact model and make of car that we have get T-boned by a bright green Mustang convertible in an intersection that I go through, like, all the time. So I was like, holy shit, and was sitting there, and I had, like, a clear vantage point. So I just snapped a pic of the, like, banged up facsimile of our car. It was, like, same color, same everything. And I just send it in a text to my wife and say, "I messed the car up, frowny face emoji."
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
Whoa.
Boy, was she mad at me. Mad at me for 48 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that. Do you have any regrets? Yeah. I hope you don't. That is...
How often do you get an opportunity like that is the question I ask, but also it's like an opportunity to stick your dick in a blender, you know?
Ben, that's got to go on your mount bit more, I think. That's a top 4 bit right there. Wow. And damn the consequences also. Like, you see a shot like that, you got to take it. Here's the one way where that I could see being legitimately not cool is if there was ever a question about you being injured.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a fun thing to play with.
I mean, I didn't imply. I mean, I thought that the tone of my text was sufficiently cheeky that
right.
The implication would never be drawn that I was hurt.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was real rattled by it nonetheless.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great one. Great
Anyways.
Bit.
Yeah.
I fully endorse that bit.
Sometimes doing a bit on the wife works, sometimes it does not.
Wow. That's quality content for the Marin Open, Ben. What do you say?
That was a big heaping Marin.
Yeah, that's value right there. Value for your show-watching dollar, I'd say.
I think this is our this episode comes out on December 24th, so we got to reward the people for sneaking away to take a very long poop and listening to our show.
This one goes out to all our bathroom listeners. Luxuriating while their legs fall asleep.
Yeah.
All right. Well, one episode that definitely keeps you on your toes is one Deep Space Nine Season 3, Episode 18, Distant Voices.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course
this is
don't.
Another episode that opens with a Bashir and Garak lunch hang, and it seems like they have like kind of a standing weekly hang, right?
I feel like its frequency has changed. It used to be more frequent, I thought, like a regular breakfast. But yeah, I think I'm with you on this.
One thing I really admire about you is that you establish routine hangs with friends of yours. Like you have a really good sense of like how to practice friendship. I have like friends that I haven't seen in months and never call on the phone. And you actually, like, you make the effort, and I like that about you.
Well, I mean, let's make one thing perfectly clear. I'm not calling anyone on the phone. Nor am I answering said phone. If someone else were to call.
Yeah, but you do like, we'll go get a taco once a week and have a hang.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's good, good friendship hygiene.
It works.
I guess I bring this up because Garak is giving Bashir a birthday present. It's like not actually his actual birthday, but it's close enough.
Yeah, the mistake Garak makes, though, is that he gives the gift that he would like to receive himself instead of thinking of the recipient.
Right. Yeah, but you also know that Garak is always thinking of things on many levels, so like he might be playing some
He's
long
playing
game that we
birthday
just...
chess instead of birthday checkers.
Yeah. I think that might be the case.
There's like a oblique reference to Bashir's preference for a mystery of a certain kind versus a mystery of the Cardassian kind. Which is the holosuite program that Garak has given him.
It would be really fun to see Bashir do like a Dixon Hill mystery that we've actually seen before. Like, oh, this is like a product that Picard is... like anybody with an English accent in the Trek universe loves Dixon Hill for some reason.
That is a great idea. Like rebuild all of those sets. Bring back all of those bit actor parts.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be great?
Hey, I'd be into that big time.
I don't know who I am. I'm Cyrus Redblock.
Well, they're interrupted very rudely by your buddy Quark, who's got he's trying to broker a sale of biomimetic gel for a creepy alien named Altovar. Altovar has got a particularly scary type of loaf. You know, a type of loaf that just says villain.
Yeah, Altovar sort of has a Sarlacc type of mouth, I think.
Mm.
Like, he's got teeth around teeth.
It's a scary look, you know? And he's asking for this biomimetic gel. Bashir kind of politely explains that not only is the sale of biomimetic gel like a very carefully controlled and regulated scenario, but even trying to obtain it illegally is considered a felony. And Quark's like, I know, I'm doing a felony.
He's also doing a felony.
Why is Quark not arrested right then and there? And Altovar.
He's clearly under duress, though. Like, he doesn't want to be asking this question, and I think Bashir can tell. Bashir, also, like, on the heels of this conversation with Garak, is a little pissy about his birthday, and so he's like, he kind of, what? Altovar? Like, when the question gets asked, and I think that... Yeah. I think that pisses Altovar off enough to have sort of become the inciting incident for what's to come.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little bit of that thing where they try to go back to their conversation and then Quark is like, hey, why aren't you eating at my place? Why are you eating over here?
Because the food really sucks there, Quark. Get it together.
He says he changed the menu. They haven't even tried the new menu.
Gonna have to ask Morn what his thoughts are on that menu. I bet he's a guy who liked it the way it was.
you ask him, he's never going to shut up. And, you know, Morn just has very low standards. He eats at that hungry heifer all the time.
You think he's still filled with darts? Like, I don't think we ever saw those darts being removed from his body.
Yeah, if you ever, like, if he ever turned around, you would just see that his back is riddled with them.
Maybe that's what makes him such a good lover, is that his skin is naturally desensitized so as to make it last longer. I think we're learning more and more about him.
He doesn't need to use his and hers KY jelly.
You don't want to get those confused, Ben, that's for sure.
No, it'd be bad. Well, we go to Tidal, and when we come back, Bashir is like wandering back to Six Bay, which apparently closes and, you know, shuts down when he's not there, which I thought was kind of surprising. Like, that's the medical facility on Deep Space Nine. What if he's like on vacation or on a Defiant mission? Like, is there literally nothing going on in Six Bay? If you break your arm, do you just have to wait?
He should really have one of those paper signs with the little clock and the hands that you that you stick, like, we'll be back in 15.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be considerate.
He finds that on the floor, and as he enters, there's Altavar tossing the medicine cabinet in Bashir's office.
What are you doing here? What are you doing here? When did you get here? I'm sad.
And when Altavar turns around, do you remember the interplanetary rubber band men episode where the guys had lightning hands?
Yes.
Altavar kind of has that, but he instead of doing it to chest, he does it to head.
Yeah, you don't want to be the head in the middle of that lightning.
Yeah.
Ben, Altavar is legitimately scary. Like, and as a creature design, I feel like Star Trek really did something great with him as a Lethian. He's our first and I think only Lethian we'll ever see, but boy, he's terrifying. He's big, and he shoots lightning out of his hands.
I would love to see Lethians be a going concern.
Yeah. Yeah, they look like a lot of work, though. That's the trouble.
I did really feel bad for this actor. Just, like, the loaf is so intense and so compromising of mouth that I was trying to imagine, like, what he does when they break for lunch. They, like, throw an In-N-Out burger in a blender and let him suck it through a straw or something.
He's definitely a Bubba Tea straw alien at Crafty, that's for sure. You got any Bubba at the bottom of that smoothie? Ben, that's what you got to do.
Boba.
I always call it Bubba because it's very irritating for people.
Yeah, it is really irritating.
Just really clangs, huh?
Yeah, it's like a redneck tea.
Yeah, what do you think's at the bottom of redneck Bubba tea? Just what are those chewing tobacco pouches?
Oh, dip.
Yeah,
it's just dip down there.
Yeah, pretty gross.
You're sucking dip through a straw. Ugh.
Bashir comes to in his tossed infirmary, and nothing's working. The computer's all flickery. The screens are flickering. His comm badge doesn't work.
This begins a long period of time in this episode where the lighting becomes very gloomy and moody. And I really like that about it. Like, the tone of this episode is a shift away from what we normally get in a way that I appreciated.
I had a question for you, Ben, a production question, which is, when you shoot monitors, it is important to calibrate those monitors against the frame rate of the camera you're shooting. Otherwise, you'll get either strobing or like a run, right? Like a line that runs up the screen very slowly. That'll happen sometimes if that's miscalibrated. But it made me wonder, like, if you're making lights flicker, how mindful you need to be about the flicker versus the frame rate. And it almost looks like a couple of these flickers are in post instead of in scene. Did you get that feeling?
Oh, interesting. I didn't notice it as that, but I wouldn't be surprised if you have to be a little judicious with what you're doing practically, but you can always add some black frames in later.
Thought they did a good job with it in this episode.
Yeah, it's nice. Bashir is real creeped out because Deep Space Nine is basically empty, and he, you know, starts kind of wandering around the promenade, goes into Quark's, and I really like this scene because you can kind of hear the Lethian raging around somewhere in the deep in the bar, but you don't ever see him. You do see Quark like cowering behind, just like totally terrified. And this is the first hint that we get that like Bashir is not alone, but something is very strange about the station, because Quark does not really seem to be himself, despite how smashy, you know, like he's not reacting in a way that kind of reads as Quark,
right?
For this scenario.
Nor is it like the version of Quark we find when someone interacts with the prophets, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the infirmary that has been tossed. The Quark's bar set is in the process of being tossed, yeah, as Quark cowers. Like, it's full-on bar stools being thrown.
Yeah. At some point, Bashir, like, walks up to a replicator, and there's just, like, a stream of urine coming out of it. He sticks his hand in and smells it. What are you doing, Bashir?
It looks especially pungent because it's so yellow.
Yeah, that's somebody who is like very dehydrated and has also eaten a bunch of asparagus, just ripping a piss into the replicator.
That's someone who's enjoyed a couple of broed drinking vitamins.
Yeah, yeah. We've talked about those on the show, right?
Yeah, Broad, not a sponsor of the show, but really should be.
You discovered this it's a pill that you take as you drink your second drink of an evening in which you, forecast that you will partake quite a bit of alcohol, and it's supposed to relieve your hangover the next day.
It works.
What they don't say on the package is that it also makes your urine smell like toxic waste the next day.
Fair trade is what I'll say about that.
I'm getting over a cold, and I've been doing those like vitamin C packets that you like, yeah, rip open and dump into a glass of water.
Yeah.
And same effect,
mm,
which I never had before. But ever since I've had those Broads, now emergency also makes my pee smell like toxic waste. Thanks, Adam.
If we were to realize that Broad is doing permanent damage to us, I don't think that would discourage us from their use.
It's like smoking in the 50s. Like, Broad has like a guy in a lab coat in their TV commercial. Like, I prefer Broad, the safest drinking vitamin.
Hey, Broad, get at us. We'll do some ads for you.
Yeah, this is going great, right?
This ad is over.
I'd let him just beep out the brand name.
Oh, yeah?
You know? Yeah, because I don't want them to get it for free before they pay us.
They know who they are. There's only one drinking vitamin on the market you can buy on Amazon.
Golden Carton.
The Cut.
Golden Carton.
So,
he also runs into Garak. I think, what is he in, like the security room when he runs into Garak?
Yeah, yeah. Who seems equally as panicky about the circumstances.
Garak is an interesting character to be running into here because of all the people on the station. We know that he's like very capable when the station is not acting according to spec. You know, we saw that in the lockdown episode where the station was going to kill everybody to put down a Bajoran riot it perceived to be happening. And they're talking about like, where is everybody? Like what situation could possibly have led to the station being, for all intents and purposes, empty and as badly damaged as it is. And that's a big puzzle, right? Because like the doctor it's like 28 days later, you know, he's just waking up and discovering that he is in a nightmare world, and he's not getting like super satisfying answers from Garak as to like what might have happened. Like Garak is puzzling through it just at the same level that he is.
There have been times when circumstances similar to these have happened on the Enterprise D. I'm thinking specifically of like the 11010110 episode, and maybe the one where the crew de-evolves.
Sure.
What is it about that circumstance on that ship that is more scary than what is happening on DS9? I couldn't really put my finger on it. Like, not to skip to the end here, but like, we know this is a fantasy and isn't real, but there's a squicky kind of skin crawly nightmare feeling on the ship that just doesn't seem to be present on the station. I don't know why that is.
I wonder if it's because of what we know about the station's proximity to civilization. You know, Bajor is right there. It's not out in a super remote part of space where nobody can easily get to it.
That is a great answer.
It's where people go to.
That's a tuxedo quality answer right there, Ben. Like, you were right on it with that.
And Garrick split up, but Bashir then finds a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Already taking place. And it's Dax, Odo.
I'm Mr. Bunkin.
O'Brien.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien.
And Kira. And this is another scenario that seems very strange. Like, it's not, there's no chain of command in this McLaughlin group. Kira does not appear to be in charge, nor does anybody else.
We should mention at this point that that Bashir has been salt and peppered a little bit up to this point and is now looking full on Ronnie Coxie.
I don't know what you're talking about.
In this scene.
Yeah.
Like, he's been aging.
He's been aging. I think they actually used the exact same prosthetics that they used on DeForest Kelly in the first episode of TNG.
Yeah, they went to the Science Fiction Museum and closed that exhibit, pulled it off of the rack.
It is an unfortunately bad age makeup. One of those ones where I, like, wanted it to be an HD for perverse, see how bad it really is reasons.
You got some reason you want my atoms scattered all over space, boy.
It's kind of a Gap Girls thing happening because that old age makeup is only making the Lethian look that much better just in comparison, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. And he keeps running into the Lethian. Like, he's on the elevator at one point and the Lethian, like, reaches its hands in and he, like, kicks the guy's fingers. It's legitimately terrifying, and I feel like handloaf is something that Trek has failed at previously.
Right.
But this handloaf is good and scary.
The handloaf you frequently see on Star Trek looks like dog penis. And they really do a much, much better job this time around.
Yeah, it's a remarkably dog dickless handloaf situation.
The idea they come up with during this McLaughlin group, and we should be clear, like, there's a fair amount of there's a McLaughlin group-esque amount of fighting happening at this McLaughlin group. Like, Pat Buchanan is yelling over Eleanor Clift. John McLaughlin himself is struggling to keep control of the conversation. It's really going off right now.
If the Obama administration were that powerful,
time to think, maybe I would.
Julian,
there you are. Where have you been?
Yeah, it's
the hardest talk, really.
Doesn't seem like a bipartisan agreement is fomenting in this situation. Everybody's kind of pointing fingers at everybody else. Like, you know, the chief is pissed at Odo that security didn't prevent whatever happened. Odo is pissed at the chief for not having fixed everything. And this is when Bashir starts to kind of figure out that this is a weird situation, and you know, he's like, he asked the computer to scan everybody in the room for anomalies, which I love the way he phrases this, because the computer can be forgiven for not telling him anything. Like, if he's the only one that's actually in the room, he's gonna get back a result that, you know, reveals nothing to him. But he doesn't realize that yet.
Yeah,
because, like, what we come to understand is that this is like a solipsistic nightmare. These are all parts of his personality being represented to him, and he's in a coma, and every character represents an element of his personality.
I love that the characters kind of resent this implication right away.
What the hell's going on here?
Especially O'Brien. O'Brien's like, give me that tricorder, and then like holds it like a slice of pizza in front of himself.
Yeah, he holds it like the pizza with the cheese in the crust.
Yeah, that's a great call. That's perfect direction right there.
Yeah, they're like, Colm, you know the pizza that just came out this year that has cheese in the crust?
And he's like, yeah, it's fucking spectacular. The plan is, let's all go to the cargo bay where O'Brien can find some gear in there to get the station going again.
That's when the revelation comes out that they're all figments of his imagination. And the station is not the station, it's his mind. It's like it's a construct in his head that represents his brain, and the sabotage is about the cascade of damage that is being caused by the Lethian. Like the Worf lightning that went into Bashir's head is having a lingering effect and continuing to degrade his brain while he's in this coma.
We get one of the classic "don't you see" style monologues here. If I could only go through every teleplay that's ever been written on Star Trek and find and remove "don't you see" as a line of dialogue. You have found 700 examples.
There's transcripts of all these scripts online. I'd be interested to see what the number of "don't you sees" in Star Trek is.
That's a definite thing.
I think Deep Space Nine might have a higher instance of those than TNG.
Yeah.
Right.
I think so. It's a little more explainy.
Well, while he is on this jag, the Lethian grabs Jadzia and just like hauls her through a door, which begins a series of character disappearances that become like increasingly freaky. Like, this is weirdly like the least freaky of them, right?
Yeah, Dax really gets King Konged by the Lethian too. Like, all you hear is her screaming and she's like kicking out of his arms.
Yeah, yeah. And then he throws a barrel at Bashir.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my living state.
Oh,
I don't use the bucket.
The thinking is that all of these characters represent different Bashir behaviors. So Dax, who was taken away, represented like a confidence and adventure sense of being for Bashir. O'Brien representing doubt or disbelief. Kira is clearly aggression. Odo would be suspicion or fear. And
paranoia.
And the group together comes up with the hypothesis that the Lethian is representing the telepathic damage done to Bashir's mind, and the station would be the representation of that mind.
So he's gotten his sense of adventure taken away from him.
Yeah.
And then, like, it's one of those trick cuts where suddenly he's playing racquetball with Garrick.
Yeah.
I feel like the rules of this scenario are like fairly dreamlike in a way that I like. You know, at one point he like breaks his hip, but then a couple scenes later, that's not a factor in a way that you know, that would happen in a dream, you know, like, mm-hmm. Oh, I broke my hip. And then like two dream beats later, you're like, you know, running after a unicorn or something.
Hey man, this isn't the sort of show where we share our dream beats with each other. This is you'll notice in this scene, Ben, and we've talked about it a bunch before, how difficult it is to shoot racket sports. There are a number of swings that don't show a ball. Like, there's out of frame tennis ball happening here, and I think that's very intentional.
Yeah, you never see a rally, right? It's
sure.
like Bashir will get one over the net and then Garrick hits it back right into the net, because it's, unless you're, you know, a pretty talented tennis player, acting and playing tennis at the same time are, you know, it's like walking and chewing gum. You just don't want to do it.
Right. So Garrick's advice is that they get to ops, because that's like naturally the place to begin any sort of repair of the station.
If the station represents your mind, you want to go to the, you want to go to the control center to get back control of it. And like any horror movie, they decide to split up, and Bashir is creeping through some hallways on his way to ops. in a way that doesn't make sense, right? Like, but I guess works in dream logic. Like, you would never go into the habitat ring to get to Ops.
Yeah.
But that's where he is when he runs into Sisko. And, like, at this point, he knows that everybody is just a representation of something to him. So Sisko is doctoring, and Bashir's like, oh, I get it. You're my professionalism. Duh. Big whoop, Sisko. Not impressed.
And then Sisko gets King Konged through the wall.
Yeah, and this is raising the stakes, right? Because it's just, he's standing next to a bulkhead and gets pulled right through it.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like he gets hauled through a doorway. It's like the Lethian can move through walls now.
Yeah, and the truth of the circumstance, after having a couple of examples of this, is that the Lethian's just toying with him. Like, he can take pieces off the table whenever he wants to. Phasers don't work on him because Bashir tries shooting him. And yeah. Altavar makes the threat to him that he's going to just take him apart and torture his mind and then kill him at the end of it. And then we get a pretty fun red eyes to commercial.
Yeah, those red contact lenses on Altavar are terrifying.
Looking good. After the commercial, Bashir is almost totally enveloped in a burlap sack.
You treat her like a lady, and she'll always bring you home.
Total burlap coverage.
Yeah.
Kira and Odo are dead, or Odo's dying, right? He's like half puddled on the floor.
Yeah.
In a fun way. And so the logic of this is that Bashir is running out of time.
Yeah, they know this because they see a monitor of him en route to Ops that's showing his diminishing vitals. Not looking good.
I'm dying.
I could have told you that just by looking at you.
Not looking good. Yeah, there's that one point where O'Brien gets the comms back, but it's just receiving, and he's just hearing people talk about him in the room where he's in the coma. Did you get the sense that they could, like, ever turn back to that, or was that the only glimpse they got of what was going on in the outside world?
Boy, I don't know. It sure never seems like it's on the table.
That would have been nice, right? Check in again, see what it says.
Yeah, it might provide some information useful to Bashir at this point.
But yeah, he is not taking the most direct route to Ops, because he finds himself in Quark's looking at a dying, even older version of himself on a slab, and people are betting on different ways he might die or whatever. Quark is serving as the bookie.
Yeah, you can bet on anything here. Which organ fails first?
Yeah. It was good to see Quark back in good spirits, right?
Yeah. Yeah, back where he belongs.
Yeah. Except for not for long, because dead Bashir on the slab turns into alive Choki Lethian who kills Quark.
Yeah.
And this is where Bashir breaks his hip, right? Because he's like running away from this scenario. Garak helps him to Ops, and what he wants to do is repair the central computer on the logic that's the analog for fixing his brain.
Right. Things are getting more and more unhinged as we go, and Bashir's arrival to Ops is really the beginning of that. Like, he looks full on like Chuck Yeager now. He's greeted by a Bajoran woman, Marilyn Monroeing him.
Happy birthday, Mr. President.
With a birthday song.
Boy, she has like a Marge Simpson amount of hair, too.
Yeah. Yeah. All of the computer panels are filled with tennis balls. Bashir keeps falling over and falling over again.
Oh, Terminus! Oh, look at that! Oh, Terminus! Oh, I fell over! Oh, I fell over again!
I don't know how he stood at all with a broken hip, but it's theater of the mind stuff, so...
Dream logic stuff.
And Garak is growing more and more on team, why don't you just give up? And this hips Bashir to the idea that maybe Garak isn't on his side at all.
Yeah, he goes, it's my party and I'll repair the central computer if I want to. You would repair the central computer if it was your brain.
I don't know if there's any way to repair this
D
Deep Space Wilson or whatever. You know tennis ball brands, Ben. Hop in here and help anytime.
Wilson is a tennis ball brand. You're right.
All right. Great.
You did good. I feel like Wilson is irrevocably associated with volleyballs now, though.
Yeah. Yeah. They've been typecast.
It was always much more of a tennis brand than a volleyball brand. But if you say a Wilson, what do you think of? You think of a volleyball.
That's what happens when you've been ball typecast, Ben. Ben, Garrick is Altivar. Altivar is Garrick.
He's my sister and my daughter.
Time for a hot shower.
I always suspected as much.
Altivar knows all about Bashir, and he takes, like any bad guy, he takes a moment to monologize Bashir and humiliate him over his many mistakes that he's made in his life.
Yeah. I love the way Altivar points at Bashir's temple using his thumb nail, because his thumbs are like extra long and have like a creepy velociraptor
just
nail
like,
on them.
You do not want to share cocaine with Altivar because his shovels are like...
Yeah, you'll like, fucking OD on your first bump. but like, I love that because like this guy is in this loaf, right? And he's like, what would this alien species do to point? They would use this, you know, they wouldn't use their index finger. They would use their thumb because it's a more like specific point that they're making.
It's good character
I really
work
like
here.
That. Yeah.
What are you doing?
The thing that Bashir hits on is that that Ops is maybe the center of the station in the real world, but the center of the station in his world is in fact the infirmary, back where he started. So he kind of gives Altivar the slip and winds up back in Six Bay, where Altivar is also, because dream.
Right.
Get away from that panel.
Oh, what?
And he starts like monkeying with the computer. And gets a little bit of control back. He puts a force field around Altivar, an annular force field.
Oh, there you go.
You know what I was thinking about the other day? Remember how we like found out the definition of annular?
Yeah, it was ring-like.
Yeah. Do you think that etymologically it's related to the word anus?
Absolutely. That's... Ben, I thought that was the joke the whole time.
I didn't even hit on that until like days later.
Everything on this show has to do with a dick or a butt. Don't you know that? We've done 250 episodes.
Somehow that's always a surprise to me. That's why it stays funny, you know, because comedy is all about, you know, defying your expectations.
Right. Yeah.
At this point, he's got Altivar where he wants him. It doesn't seem like Altivar can win, but Bashir also gets on his high horse, you know, like Altivar saying, like, why did you fail to be the number one in your class in medical school? You're ashamed of yourself. You never actually put the moves on Jadzia, all this stuff. And Bashir is like, what is this, a psychic attack or a therapy session?
Yeah, I mean, like, who's torturing who at that moment?
Yeah, that's the bumper sticker that Bashir has on the back of his Previa. It's a picture of Altivar and it says who tortured whom.
Oh, thanks for correcting my grammar there also. That was nice.
I don't know if I'm right about that.
Fucking asshole. Yeah. Bashir wakes up. He comes to looking youthful on a triangular pillow.
Yeah, and we are back where we started. Bashir and Garrick having their breakfast or lunch or whatever. And turns out that the attack that Bashir suffered is nearly always fatal. So Bashir is unusual for having survived it. And he and Garrick debate whether that's luck or something else at play.
Yeah.
Does Bashir read as 30 years old to you?
I mean, I'm famously unable to judge the ages of anyone. So I don't know. Like he looks like he's our age, and we're not 30.
I'm 35, and you're almost 40.
I know. Yeah. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
I think we're looking great.
Yeah. What did you think about Bashir riding hard for staying in the friend zone with Jadzia?
I think there's an awkward kind of revisionist history happening here.
Uh-huh.
Where Bashir makes the case that his relationship to Dax is one of friendship, and that is a friendship he wouldn't trade for anything. But a breath before that, he says that he will always keep the candle lit for her. It's hard for me to believe that anyone who is infatuated with a friend could also be just their friend and be satisfied with that state of being, as if there wouldn't be any sort of like latent manipulation happening to encourage a more than friendship situation. I guess that's where my mind went. It's like, sure, that's saying that you're happy with a friendship and you wouldn't trade it for anything seems like the sort of lie that someone tells themselves when they're in a situation where they want to be something more with someone and yet can't.
Yeah. Made me sad.
Yeah.
But then again, I feel like he knows that she's not into him in that way.
Yeah.
And so maybe what he needs is a way to rationalize it to himself that he's not going to pursue it.
It's okay to be infatuated with someone and not do anything about it because you're friends, and to do so would mean wrecking that. Like, I'm not trying to say that there's anything wrong with keeping that candle lit. He sure has come full circle, hasn't he?
Yeah.
In that regard. Like, he is not, like, to begin as the creep that he was and end up in the healthy relationship that he has is pretty great.
Yeah.
Good job by him.
Yeah.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I did. I think that, you know, like the episode with O'Brien jumping forward 5 hours in time seems thematically similar to this, but maybe a little less successful in execution. You know, like, I think that the major hit against this episode is the aging makeup, and I feel like they could have done some other effect to visually describe how close to death he is.
Yeah.
Because they did not nail it with the old man makeup. And
I can just see Bill Tilly's card with a picture of burlapped Bashir and the caption, did not nail it. I don't want to call Tilly shots. He can do what he wants, but God, that's funny.
But you know, he's thematically, like, it's an interesting idea, and the logic of it all hangs together nicely because you can couch a lot of it in dream logic, which is
right.
You know, like there's parts where, you know, when he and Garrick are like, let's go to ops, like that's where we go, and then Bashir goes on a totally crazy, non-direct route, and Garrick just goes somewhere else, and that's, like, not explained. Like, that was my original Shimoda before I knew what was going on in the episode, because I was like, why would they split up? Where did Garrick even go?
Right.
Like, he didn't even go out the door of the security. It doesn't make sense that he wouldn't, because that's the only way to get out of there.
Yeah. Boy, you're right. Dream logic really gets you off the hook in a lot of ways. Yeah.
But it's a smart and good use of dream logic and not a crutch use of dream logic for me. So, yeah, I really liked the episode. And I thought, I love the idea of Bashir being a great enough doctor that he can solve his brain problem from the inside out. I wish I had that fucking skill.
Boy, no kidding.
My therapist stopped using my insurance.
Oh, no.
I'm on my own here, man.
Oh, no, Ben.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
And my insurance is going to change in 3 months because my wife just got a new job. So it doesn't even really make sense to try and, like, get started up with somebody new because I'll just have to change again.
Did you have a last session with your therapist wherein...
I did.
Were there any... This doesn't have to go in the show. But, like, did he give you any tools for the interim that you could use? Anything useful, like, for the break?
No.
Fuck!
We talked about, like, the progress I had made and the things that I still have a lot of work to do on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was good to get. And she said, you know, if I start up with somebody else, she'd be happy to, you know, if I sign a piece of paper giving permission, she'll, like, get on the phone with them and try and bring them up to speed.
Wow. Get a load of this guy. You really... like, wow.
Yeah. This guy's always doing bits. Thinks he's funny.
I don't think he's here for therapy at all. He's just here to do bits on us. And in its own way, that is therapeutic.
Yeah, yeah. Makes him feel good. So I sit and endure it for 45 minutes a week and get paid to. Adam, did you like the episode?
I did like... I liked parts of the episode, but like overall... This is a move along home like example of Star Trek doing fantasy when what Star Trek really does best is science fiction fantasy. And yeah. Like putting that hat on top of its own hat doesn't usually work. And I don't think in that way it worked particularly well here. But like some of the highlights for me are Bashir acting better than his makeup. Yeah. He is wearing a shroud that makes him look pretty silly. But his old acting, I thought, was really good. Like, if you watch him closely, his shakiness is good. He gets a little Yoda at times, which, mm-hmm. like, is a little bit camp, but also a lot of fun if you're trying to act old. Like, that's there's an acting shorthand there that really is effective.
When he starts to get crouched over... There were parts where I was like, man, it kind of looks like he needs a cane.
Yeah, yeah.
And I liked that it looked like he needed one.
Yeah, so I thought it was a real strong episode for Alexander Siddig. I also thought, like, this is a weird thing to call attention to, but for props, this was a really strong episode for that. All of the tennis balls on set, all of the balloons that they needed to keep inflated for long periods of time... Like, yeah. It seems like a challenging props episode. Like, they were winging bar stools across Quark's bar. Some fairly dynamic prop work here that I think could easily be ignored, but really good work here. I think the message here is super strong, and it was something that actually really touched me. Bashir, by the end, he's reached that point where, like, in the beginning, he was resentful of reaching an age milestone, but like that moment you turn your life's choices from regrets into a thing that makes you who you are, like that is a big moment in any person's life when you can turn that corner. And that's like, that's what growing up is. And to see him both embody that and articulate that at the end, I thought was a pretty strong and good message and well done by the character. And the episode.
The button on the episode is Bashir visiting the station's tattoo parlor, getting a no regrets across his chest.
Ask Chris Brenner how he feels about tattoos.
I'm Chris Brenner. Brenner Information Systems. You know, interface, operations, net access, channel 90.
That Chris Brenner.
Yeah, he's back, baby! Adam, I watched this episode two times. I watched once to take notes and stuff, mm-hmm. and then like we had planned to record it like last week or something, and I felt like enough time had gone by that I should watch it again.
That's smart.
And I really enjoyed it the second time, just watching it through. So I feel like maybe I had a more medium to negative reaction the first time through, but the second time through, just watching it with no notebook, I really enjoyed it. So
I did the same thing, and I definitely agree. Ben, one thing that we're in agreement on is that now is the time to read Priority One messages.
Oh, yeah.
What do you say we do that?
I'm into it.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of Priority One messages here. First one is of a personal nature, and it is from Daniel of the long last name, and it is for Alice the Teal. Goes like this. When you're not listening to the pod at 1.5x... dancing or civilly engineering, you're always being a damn good friend. When the darkness gathers in the twilight of the mind, your smile is joy's last bastion.
Wow.
May you be blessed as you bless all who meet you. P.S. You think that Ben or Adam will realize that Garrick and Bashir are banging by the time this P1 airs? What? Boy, there's a lot in there.
You know, at first I was ready to really go in on Alice for her 1.5 listening speed in such a way that, like, how great can she be for Daniel if all she's wanting to do when she listens to Daniel talk is, like, speed up the pace of conversation?
Yeah.
But how Daniel describes Alice is so sweet, I'm reluctant to do that.
Are Garrick and Bashir banging in this episode? Is that the implication?
There is, for a dream scenario, a distinct lack of sex.
Yeah.
In the story. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bashir doesn't, like, come around a corner in the nude ever.
No.
Anything.
No, he sure doesn't.
And if they are banging, how upsetting would it be to, like, have your lovemaking partner turn out to be a monster that's trying to kill your brain in your dream?
That'll happen. Sometimes that's what it takes to get you over the top, Ben. A little, little imagination.
Yeah.
About brain damage.
Nothing sexier than brain damage.
Ben, our second priority one message is also of a personal nature. It is from Mubius, and I'm pronouncing it because there's the two dots over the O.
Oh.
And the message is for you and me.
Oh.
Message goes like this. Thank you for your awesome, cool, and informative podcast. In parentheses, my first one ever.
Wow.
And for giving me yet another reason to watch TNG and DS9.
All other podcasts are so much better. You're going to be really excited.
Yeah. Also, thank you for your wisdom in helping me on my never-ending quest to answer the age-old question, what do I hate more, a Lwaxana Troi episode or a Grand Nagus Ferengi episode? You guys are the best. Rock on. Hey, thanks, yeah. Mubius.
The French call that accent le tréma. Just
how
in
would,
case you were wondering.
How would you say their name then?
I don't know. I mean, I might just say Mobius, but
yeah,
hard to know.
You can't be blamed for saying it wrong if you say it Mobius.
Yeah, they always use that in the New Yorker when there's two vowels, two of the same vowel right next to each other, like reenactment. They'll put a diuresis over the first E. You got a subscription to the New Yorker, Adam?
I'm just thinking about how much I need to put a diuresis on the end of this episode. What do you say?
Gross.
What do you say we bring it to a close, Ben?
I'm into that.
If you have a priority one message of a personal or commercial nature, you can take it on over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200, and they reach a fuck ton of people. You have no idea how
a
many...
A friendly group of DeSotos.
Yeah. And they help with the ongoing production of our program. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, they sure do. Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped.
This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with a leader in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I sure did. And much like you, I had a Shimoda the first time I watched this episode that was very different from the one I found the second time through. We're just going to go with the second time through Shimoda, which is, there is the scene where, I think it's post-McLaughlin Group.
Bye-bye.
Where they tune the radio to what's happening to Bashir's body in real time. And they overhear a bedside conversation that's happening between Sisko and the nurse in the room.
And Dax, right? Like, yeah. Dax is administering stuff to him.
The thing that's clear in that scene is that Bashir has 3 hours to live.
Yeah.
And Sisko, after hearing this, says, "That's pretty tough. I'll be in my office." Sisko is down his chief medical officer, and instead of doing anything like hailing Starfleet command, maybe blowing in a call to Bajor to see about getting their best medical minds to pay a visit to the station, decides to just go into solitude and spend the next 3 hours in his office. Sisko, what are you doing? Like, do anything besides nothing right here. I thought that was, and that is not fantasy Sisko. That is Sisko Prime.
Making, that's the Sisko of the real.
Yeah. I would be deeply upset if I were the Bashir at the end who lives through the matter. Like, I think I would want to go visit Sisko in his office afterwards and have some words. What about you, Ben?
Just adjacent to Sisko in that scene is Nurse Jabara, the Bajoran nurse that we've seen working with Bashir several times now. And
Nurse 90210.
She's had a couple of lines. Yeah, and she's in the dream world. She's nursing with Sisko in the dream world,
right.
But she does not represent anything but nurse. Like, for the only character in the dream world that isn't, you know, like, there's the sick and dying people that Sisko is there to, you know, and it's pretty obvious that those are representations for the sake of establishing what Sisko represents. But the fact that she's there also and, like, doing nurse things, she just represents nurse. She literally represents the same thing in his subconscious as she does in the real world. And I thought that was a nice, incisive little, like, this is what Star Trek does to women characters sometimes. It's like, I don't know, make her a nurse.
In Jazz Horse, there are hundreds of what are known as non-player characters. And and the nurse here definitely feels like one of those, like someone that you can have only a very shallow interaction with. They're not meant to be played with in any substantial way.
Yeah, she's not part of the mission. She's just there.
Bashir's like, howdy. And the nurse is...
Hi there, mister.
That's a good girl. Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is season 3, episode 19, Through the Looking Glass. In a parallel universe, Sisko must assume the role of his dead counterpart in order to save the mirror version of his late wife.
Ooh, we're back in the mirror universe? It seems like we were just there.
It's a mirror ep.
How many mirror episode eps are there in Deep Space Nine? Are there a lot of them? You've
I
seen
think
this
kind of a bunch.
Series? Okay. Great. I love these.
Yeah. I'm going to log into the admin side of gach.biz/game and queue up our dice roll. We are currently on square 44 of the game, looking at a traveler square and a space butthole that could land us on Fuck It, We'll Do It Live.
Hmm?
In these squares that we potentially land on.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Tell me when you're ready for me to roll it, Adam.
Roll.
I have rolled another one. I think that's two consecutive ones.
Tula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
We're on square 45. Still in the danger zone for a traveler or a space butthole, but we're just inching along here in the game of buttholes, the will of the prophets.
I love that there was an elite hacksaw out there that told us that that the code to the game is sound. There is no...
Yeah, they went in and looked at the number randomization algorithms and gave it a clean bill of health, no shenanigans.
Checks out. That's nice to hear. You want a second opinion on that stuff sometimes.
I miss doing drunkisodes, though. It's been such a long time.
We'll get some of those, I'm sure.
Yeah. We'll just kick off a run of like 11 drunkisodes in a row and we'll hate life.
I hope not.
Yeah, that would suck.
One reason to love life, Ben, is the constant support of the viewers of this program. If you wish to support the show on an ongoing basis, you can go over to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Yeah.
Get yourself on a low, low cost monthly plan. It helps pay for the server space and download numbers for this show. It's a costly thing to put this thing out. It's one of the ways that success has cut the opposite direction. It also keeps us eating and Ben going to therapy. So we appreciate all your support.
It also yields you some fun bonus apps. There's now two Greatest Gen Holiday apps in the donor feed, and a whole bunch of other Greatest Gen episodes also that are only available to people who support at the $5 and up monthly levels. And if you'd like to get access to those, if you've got more poops to take to keep clear of your family this holiday season, you want something to listen to, you could do a lot worse.
Yeah, I'm just going to be specific. $5 a month, I think most people can handle that, and that would make a meaningful difference to the show and its ability to continue. So if you've got it, $5 a month is a great way to support the show. And please do if you can.
Please. If you would like to support the show in other ways, there's a bunch of ways to do it. You could tell a friend, recommend the show to a family member or whatever, and you can also go on Apple Podcasts and leave a nice review. That really helps our numbers, and we really appreciate everybody who does that. You can also join the Reddit or the Facebook group. Not that anybody should be on Facebook. You can talk about it on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. Our boy Bill Tilly is on there every week making trading cards of jokes from the episodes. And They are one of the most delightful things that exist in the known universe. So I highly recommend checking those out, even though Twitter is also garbage.
Yeah, Bill Tilley is the best. Thanks, Bill.
We got to thank Dark Materia, who made the original theme music for this show. Didn't even realize they were making theme music when they made it, the Picard song, but then we came along and took it, but then got permission after the fact. And now our boy Adam Ragusea, the Goose, makes a bunch of custom music for this program that is all inspired by that original Picard song. And we got to thank Adam Ragusea as well. I love the music on this show.
So many people
check out his SoundCloud. He's got a lot of the songs from the show up on there.
Oh, yeah, that's a good call. Ben, we have so many people to thank. This show has been like a Katamari Damacy of like gathering great friends. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, it sure is. So thanks, one and all. Everybody out there listening, everybody that supports in all the different ways. Thank you.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another bad episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine because it's the Mirror Universe. And another great episode of The Greatest Generation because it's also in the Mirror Universe.
I see what you did there.
Right?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.